Hey, Jeff.
Episode of Podcast Versus Everyone. I am one of your normal hosts, Jeff Neusser. Craig Powers regrettably cannot be with us this week. It will shock you. Those of you who follow him on Twitter or TikTok or Instagram, you know how enamored my friend is with concerts and attending live shows. And so it will not shock you to find out he is attending another live show tonight. And so in his stead, we are welcoming one of my closest friends, I think, is Zane Murfitt. Some of you might remember Zane from when he used to do a bit more writing for Coug Center before, you know, like his children started growing up, which is really what happens to all of us, right?
This happens to
all of us. But you might, if you're like, the name, I'm not sure. I'm sure you remember his incredible visuals pushed on the website, data visuals with, you know, Tableau and all that stuff. So Zane, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Episode 199. I'm pumped.
Yeah. Craig's, episode 199.
I know. You guys got big plans for 200?
Well, if you're a regular listener to the show, we know we rarely have plans. That's not a thing that we do, Zane. No, like I actually had to look. So when I was getting ready to type this up, I thought, oh shit, this isn't episode 200, is it? Like that would be bad to like have it be. I mean, again, like, you know, that's, I always love to say like, there's nothing special about round numbers, but also round numbers are special. Right. And so I'm of like, I got to make sure it's not. And then I looked and I was like, oh God, it's only 199. Okay, good. Like, Craig will be back next week. We'll do episode 200. You know, it'll be good. We'll celebrate in, I don't know, whatever way we can. It's not like there's, again, not a lot of thought tends to go into these things, but I don't know. We will reflect, right? We'll sit and reflect and talk about what these, you know, 200 episodes have meant or something.
Well, I don't know. You guys mean a lot to Coug Nation, and you know, it's I'm honored to be a part of it. You know, it's I know I look forward to the show every week, and it's a big part of the prep for the games and everything. So I appreciate what you guys do. I'm honored to be here, man. I'm pumped to chat Cougs.
That is super nice. And I'm thrilled to have you on. Although I will say, the last time we had you on was not exactly a happy occasion, right? That was when we had you on around the Black Lives Matter protests and all that stuff. We kind of did our episode kind of thinking about how to be an ally. And it's very, very serious, right? Very, very serious.
Yes.
And now I'm having you on what might have been like the shittiest weekend for WSU sports that I can remember. In some, I mean, there probably have been others. There have definitely been others, but this one was like, as far as expectations versus reality, this one was terrible, right? So football loses to UCLA, and we'll start there. We'll talk, you know, quite a bit about that game, digesting that a little bit. But then soccer went out and got pounded by Arizona State. Now, I will say that soccer did actually sort of like kick off the weekend on Thursday night. I think it was Thursday night. It was either Thursday or Friday, but I think it was Thursday. Thursday night with a comeback win over Arizona. So I was like, all right, you know, here we go. And then Friday night volleyball plays Cal and dispatches of Cal pretty easily. So, all right, we're kind of rolling into the weekend, and then UCLA happens. And then, like I said, the soccer team played Arizona State and lost 5-1 while getting a player sent off. And then, the volleyball team, took on Stanford and played really well. Like, I'm not going to like say they didn't play well. They really did. They fought them tooth and nail before sort of, collapsing a little bit in the fourth set, but, losing to Stanford, you know, in what was, you know, one of the more anticipated, of not just volleyball matches, but I think sort of events in Pullman, in a while, sporting events in Pullman in a while, maybe sort of non-football division, right? So that those three losses right in a row, man, were not were a bit of a downer.
Yeah,
a bit of a downer.
It's got to be one of the first times there's ever been a top five conference matchup in any sport in Pullman, you know, maybe ever for volleyball. You know,
I believe it was determined that that was like the only one that's ever happened in any sport. Yeah. At WSU. So, yeah. And I mean, the game absolutely, we'll talk more about that match later, but it absolutely lived up to the hype. Just the ending was disappointing. So let's start talking UCLA. I'm kind of two minds here. As we kick off talking about the game, I'm sort of like, you know, it's like a good news, bad news thing, right? Like you say to someone, you know, do you want the good news first? Do you want the bad news first? And it's sort of like, you know, do we want to start with the defense or do we want to start with the offense? Like, it's kind of like, which one do we want the good vibes first and then go into the downer part? Or do we want to, you know, like sort of self-flagellate for a while and then lift ourselves up by talking about I don't know. What do you think?
I think I'm kind of an eternal optimist a bit when it comes to our Cougs.
I think
that either way, it's going to end on a positive note because I think that UCLA defense is maybe the best defense we're going to face this year. Especially the front seven. And so it's one of those games where the more time I've had away from it and kind of processing it and kind of looking at even just like the statistical makeup of the game, it's just like, yeah, they're just really good. Sometimes you just get beat, you know? And I think that's ultimately kind of what happened. I'm kind of like, hey, we could talk about the offense and their struggles, but ultimately at the end of the day, I think that they're going to get right back on track this next week.
Yeah. Something I tweeted right after the game that I absolutely stand by and still believe is that number one, winning road conference games is hard. Like that is where any analysis should start, right? Like, and I think fans, you know, sometimes underestimate that factor a little bit, but like UCLA was a 3-point favorite or a 4-point favorite, depending on where you were looking, but they were a 3 or 4 point favorite in that game, right? They were the favorite despite being unranked. But you know, it was a home game. That's different. It was hot,
super hot.
Like, super hot. Like, I don't know when the last 90 degree day we had in Pullman was, but I don't think it was recently. So
plus we've transitioned to flannel season. We're ready for our soups and our chilies and yeah,
exactly
100%.
Yeah. I've already made a chili this year. Yes. So I'm like, I'm already down and we're currently experiencing, you know, in Western Washington where you and I live, the torrential downpours are happening as we speak too. So it's like, you know, sort of like all of these factors. And then, you know, we had played, you know, three games in a row at home plus a bye week. Right. Like, so the only road game we had played was, you know, week one against Colorado State and played really well in that game, but you know, it's Colorado State and they certainly had not figured their shit out yet. They certainly have to some degree since then, but they hadn't. In week one, you play three home games, you have a bye week, and then, okay, now you go on the road. And you're playing, you know, a particularly tough, I think a tough matchup for us, right? So, like, I was 100%. Like, look, it's hard to win a game on the road. Cam played poorly. The offensive coordinator may or may not have done him any favors. Like, and then you've got this ridiculous defense, right? Like, they have all, it's not like this was a one-off. Like, they have already proven that this is a thing that they do. And Craig and I talked about it before the game. We were like, this is who UCLA is. We talked about how it sort of concerned us, all the reasons why, you know, I would much rather play. I mean, this was the case in the Leach tenure, which was like, I'd much rather play another offense forward team than a defense forward team.
100%.
You know, and well, what we saw they, on, yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, they specialize in just making the game unwatchable for your offense. Like, that's just what they do. Like, you look at the stat line even for Utah. Like, they went on the road to Utah, and I believe Utah had a pick six for one of their touchdowns. And
They
like
did.
Utah ran the ball a lot in that game, and I think that we all would say Utah is, you know, a pretty good running team. Took them 48 attempts to get to 100 yards. They averaged 2 yards a carry. Like, they just got absolutely smashed by UCLA. It's like
And
when,
they scored 14 offensive points.
right? Yeah, and it's like when, you know, when Gabe Marks would call out UCLA for being like fake tough guys. Like, yeah, that like these were real tough guys. Like, they were throwing us, they were throwing us around. Like, they were absolutely throwing us around. And you know, I think you, like, when you look at the, you know, the offense came into that game, like when you look at some of the advanced metrics and advanced stats of, like, especially how successful we were from a passing perspective, and then you just look at where we rank, like, going into the game, seventh in the country in offensive success rate, right? 55% of our passes were successful. Just off that one game, we dropped to 16th, and now only 49% of our passes were successful. Like, they just dominated in pretty much every facet of the game, and, you know, putting the offense in, and I think really the offensive line in just really tough spots. And that's the only thing I'm worried about with the offense is our third down productivity has just been lights out and really impressive. And in that game, like, it was, you know, worst performance we've had thus far. I think we were something like 2 of 13 on third down. And, you know, we just could not produce on early downs. So we were behind the sticks a lot, and we kind of put Cam in a bunch of, like, really tough situations, and UCLA just beat us in those situations. And so that's where it's, you know, I'd be curious to see how that kind of plays out throughout the rest of the season, is like we run into defenses who are, you know, halfway decent on early downs. Like, does the third down success continue? Because I don't really feel like that's something you can fully bet on. But, you know, UCLA was also, you know, good on early downs, and, you know, oh, by the way, also really good on third down as well. You know, it's like, or maybe not really good, but not bad. And so you were just going to end up in some really challenging spots there, you know, for the offense, both just like stylistically from how UCLA plays. I felt like they were really, you know, and it, not only were they, I think they schematically doing some pretty interesting things with their front seven, but then they were also just winning individual matchups on, like, every play. When that's happening, it's like, I don't really know what you can do there.
They did a lot of putting five, six guys all standing up in the box. Like, now that's somewhat gimmicky, right? But also when you, and I think you sort of put it this way, when you've got five or six or seven guys who are all like 6'3" to 6'5" and like 250 to 270 pounds, and like you just put all of those guys in there, then it, like there's sort of a, you know, there's there, it, like it sort of takes some of the gimmick away, right? If the guys can do it. And what I compared it to, or at least like what it looked like to me, was like this just looked like a Mike Leach, Chris Peterson apple cup. Like, and there's, you know, we'd always come out of those apple cups and just feeling, you know, like shit, because it's an apple cup. But it's like, you know, we'd watch that and we go, and Washington would, you know, drop eight, rush three, or, you know, rush, they would almost never blitz. They would just rush three or rush four, and they would just totally gum up your passing lanes. And then there would always be this like whatever, the gnashing of teeth and the hand wringing about, oh well, all you got to do to stop Mike Leach is drop eight, blah blah blah. And I'm like, that is such bullshit. Like, there are lots of teams that dropped eight on us that we
Oh yeah.
shredded. Like,
Totally.
it was
100%.
not as simple as dropping eight. It was as simple as dropping eight when you've got three guys who can win against five or six, right? And that is what we had on Saturday. Was, you know, I mean, they were rushing three, they were rushing four, and they were winning 3 on 5, 4 on 5, or 4 on 6, right? A lot of times the running back was staying in for pass pro. Which, and again, if you've got to bring a running back in for pass pro, you've got to hold in a tight end for pass pro. That's one less option out in the, you know, out in the routes. And really it just was, you know, honestly, when you just get your ass kicked, you know, physically like that, I mean, there's nothing you can really do, you know, like you can, you can try to mitigate it, but there's only so much you can actually do. And and that's why, you know, football coaches that play at the high, that, you know, that coach at the highest levels of the game, you know, the Nick Sabans, the Ryan Days, the, you know, I mean, these kinds of guys, right, who are at the tippy top, you know, level of the sport. I mean, guess what they're doing, man? They're hoarding. They are hoarding all of these, you know, fucking 6 foot five, 6 foot six, 340 pound monsters who run, you know, like 4.7 40s. And it's like, yeah, like, cause they know, man, there's no substitute for owning the line of scrimmage. And, and we know as a school that that's a really tough thing for us to do. And so while I want to be like, man, offensive line, you got to play better and you got to stop getting your asses kicked. It's also like, you know, I mean,
like, totally.
It's not very often we have those kinds of dudes up front who can really compete with guys like that. And if we're being honest, we don't have those guys right now. And UCLA did, and they just imposed their will. And, you know, and then there was like this cascading effect. So I don't know if like you felt this way as well, but like there was this cascading effect where, you know, you're starting to have this adversity. You're trying to find solutions. Nothing's really working. And then people start getting frustrated, right? You know, the offensive line starts committing false start penalties, right? Like trying to get a head start on blocking guys. Cam Ward, you know, starts to revert back to some stuff that we really hadn't seen since last year. And that's the part I think that like was sort of like, for me, like as far, like sometimes you just get beat, but I was also like, you know, Cam, real adversity for the first time all year. Really kind of seemed to get flustered and fall back into some old stuff that I kind of hoped had been flushed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that there was, you know, a lot of moments like that where it felt like there were, you know, mistakes getting made that you had hoped, we had all hoped were fixed. But that's also where I think that it just, I just keep coming back to like, I think that's one of the best defenses in the country. Yeah. And I think that, as the game state, you start to feel it. Each possession is really starting to matter more. And I think you could see Cam pressing. And I think that's old, but that's also why I feel we're all pretty collectively frustrated was that it wasn't like we couldn't move the ball at all during the game, right? Like the first fumble was, I think if, you know, Johnson follows his blockers to the left and really puts his foot in the ground, he probably scores versus he kind of cut back into one of those, you know, 6'3", 250 guys defeating a block who stood him up and then Latu punches the ball out. Or, you know, the drive that resulted in the touchdown in the third quarter, that was a, you know, what, four plays and we just marched right down the field. Really creative play design. That diamond formation on the left where Ward found Hamilton and, you know, he of course fumbled the ball at the end of the run.
That was the one we actually got back, which was
that we got back, nice. Right. A little bit of fumble luck finally.
Finally.
And so that's where I think it felt really frustrating watching the game was that it wasn't like the Leach Apple Cups where it was, hey, there's three future NFL guys on UW's D line and they're just whipping us. And then they also have like four guys in the secondary who are going to play in the league and they're just better. It didn't totally feel like that to me the whole game because there were those moments where it seemed like what we were trying to do on offense was actually working and that we were making successful plays and putting things together. But you know, I just always like, I just think about, you know, the size of that defense. And then you look at how, you know, we're a little banged up at the receiver position in that game. And I think so much of it is both maybe Cam looking at who's out there, maybe the, you know, Arbuckle looking at who's out there and having to make some hard choices about, hey, maybe this is the right play call theoretically, but do we have the people on the field to make this play right now based on kind of how this game's playing out? And that's where it started to feel like Cam was pressing a little bit. You know, I think that if Lincoln Victor's in, I think if Kelly's not injured for part of the game, I think that it really plays out much differently. Because I mean, there was a few times, right? I think like Hamilton got in space a few times, and you unfortunately just like you couldn't break it, right? And maybe that's something where, you know, Victor makes it happen. But, you know, getting chased around by a bunch of, you know, 8'6", 3", 250-pound guys with their hair on fire, not a good time, I don't think. Not a good time.
Yeah, definitely not. And, you know, so one of those, I think places where we saw, you know, maybe just not quite having the dudes was on that fourth and one play. So let's go ahead and digest that one, because that was, you know, a big talking point after the game. You know, our friend Stephen Ayers at Coug Center wrote kind of a pretty extensive
Go read it if you haven't.
breakdown. Yes, if you haven't read it yet, make sure to read it. Pretty
Seriously,
extensive breakdown of the play design.
if you're in the car right now on the way to Pullman, have whoever's in the seat next to you
Yeah.
like pause this episode and have them
Yes.
read it to you out loud. Fantastic work.
Or I SB Nation also has like a little like, you know, read it to me function.
There you
So
go.
you can
There
just
you
push
go.
play on that. Yeah. So sort of the gist of, I think, what Stephen was saying was that, and again, go read it. I can't, you know, faithfully recreate everything he said, but the gist of what he said was that the play design was excellent, that Arbuckle created a play that was well designed, well set up. It created all the advantages you'd want to create in order to get that yard. To which I say, it doesn't matter. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. But mine are basically this, like it's so Stephen also makes this point. So it sort of is like a side note. And maybe it's not a side note, but you know, he makes the point that it seems pretty clear that running the ball with the QB is kind of part of who we are under Arbuckle. That's not a, it's not a gimmick, it's not a show me thing, it's not a, you know, make the other team prepare. It's like legitimately it's been used as a weapon this year, and not just with Mateer. I know Mateer is the one that sort of like you know, we remember because he has very specific, you know, packages for him that involve him carrying the ball. But Cam Ward has carried the ball plenty. I wanted to reach through my screen and punch Ted Robinson in the face for like the 38th time in the last however many years, because Ted's like, "Oh, Cam's really not really going to beat you with your legs." I'm like, "Have you ever watched this team?
Totally.
Like, that's how we beat Wisconsin, was with Cam beating Wisconsin with his legs. Like, what are you talking about?" You know, and so
100%.
it clearly is part of what we do, not just in terms of scrambling, but in terms of designed runs. So I get that. I get that you can scheme up a great advantage scheme wise. Also, their front was kicking the shit out of our offensive line all damn day. And that kind of play, I would say this, like, and you know, I'm kind of, again, curious kind of what you think on this, but like, if you are committed to that, right? If you are committed to that, why is that Cam and who was the running back? The little white guy. I'm drawing a blank on his
Number
name
30.
right now.
How are we
Yes.
both drawing a
Yeah.
blank
I know.
on
I'm
our
drawing a
boy
total
right
blank.
now? How are we
Anyway, I
drawing a
just,
blank on our boy?
yeah,
Let's see. I'm
I
like
know. Somebody will look it up. You'll
Dylan
look it up.
Payne. Come on.
Dylan
Dylan
Payne.
Payne
All
from
right. That's,
Tumwater High School. Let's
I'm going
go.
to be
Okay.
super honest. That name was in my head, but I thought it was wrong and I didn't want to sound foolish, so I didn't say
All
it.
right.
So anyway, okay. So you got Cam Ward, you got Dylan Payne. Like, why is that not John Mateer and Nakia Watson? Right? Like,
Totally.
why is that
Yep.
not, or why is that not John Mateer and an H-back, right? Why is it not, you know, one of the tight ends, you know, put Revere, I mean, Revere was probably on the line, but you know what I mean? Like, put one of the tight ends in the backfield and let them lead
Right.
the way. I mean, I know at that point you're sort of telegraphing things, but you did have Mateer throw a pass earlier. Like, it's not
Yeah.
inconceivable that you could put Mateer in. You know, you kind of start doing some 4D chess, you know, coach brain shit, where it's like, well, maybe the other side thinks we're totally running, but then maybe they think, well, maybe they want us to think we're totally running, so maybe they're totally passing. Like, I don't know, but it's,
Yeah.
if you really are trying to get a yard, you know, I don't think it's arguable that Mateer is the more natural runner. I can't sit here and say that Dylan Payne is not a fabulous blocker. He might be, but he's also considerably smaller than some of the other options, right? I mean, he's not smaller than, you know, than Jalen, but it's like, than Jenkins, but it's like, you know, he's smaller than Nakia and he's smaller than all your tight ends.
Yeah. 100%. You know, so I mean, I don't know. It felt very obvious. Something in my brain, like, I don't really know how many times we've ran quarterback power this year, but when Payne was out there on the field, I was like, oh, we're going to try to get this with Ward.
I mean, that was my first clue. Like with Payne out there, if you're the defense, you like the running, like a handoff is sort of off the table.
Right. Going,
100%. There's no way they're handing it off to this guy. Now, maybe you're trying to trick him into thinking, okay, pass pro. And that was, Steven talked about that, right? Like UCLA seemed to be set up for pass defense, right? Like they kind of were expecting us to throw it. And I think everybody else was too. And maybe that's the deal again. Maybe that's the 4D chess game that coaches play with each other, that you put in Dylan Payne and the other side thinks, okay, this is definitely a pass. Like I truly am not sure, but you know, it's,
I don't know, man. I look at how violently the guy over our center attacked.
Yes.
Oh, and I was like, they did not think a pass was happening.
Our center is probably I don't know about you, but probably our best offensive lineman, I think.
Yes.
I think Domnus is our best offensive lineman. I mean, he got like stood up, like, and not just like stood up, but like almost like picked up off the ground and set down like 3 feet or 2 feet behind where he started.
Full like dung beetle forklift, like just absolutely thrown, which is, it was insane. It was super impressive watching it. It was just like, absolutely. Shit. That was just a beast play by their defensive tackle there. And it was one of those things where I think in the moment I was really frustrated that we did not get like Cam rolling out and giving him the opportunity to try to make a play with his feet.
Like an RPO type thing, something
totally
like throw it, tuck it, whatever.
Yeah, something like that, you know, or get creative, run mesh and have the tight end follow the mesh and sit in the middle of the field, right? Like just try to do something simple like that, that you know that you're really good at. And, you know, but at reading what Steven posted about it, you know, I was like, yeah, okay, this actually makes a lot more sense to me. And you can see as you watch the play develop after his explanation, you know, our left guard, I think like Hilborn, you know, I think the plan was for him to either help and double team with our right guard or for him to kind of lead the way for Cam. And you can see that the way they blocked it up or had it designed, and I mean, credit to Dylan Payne, like he sent his guy for a ride. He got a double team with the tight end. I think it was Dollar, and they opened it up. And it was just that we got, you know, blown off the ball at center and blown off the ball at right guard, where our right guard ran into the pulling guard on power the play just got completely blown up. Now, if it's not even a stalemate, if it's not so violently back on our right guard, that's a first down 100%. And I think that's what they thought when they called it. They were like, hey, worst case scenario, we're getting 3 to 5 yards. And we feel pretty confident now that we're almost in like scoring opportunity situation where we're going to really be able to press. And if we block this up, this is maybe a touchdown. And you could see that, like, you're putting Cam one-on-one. I know that he's not known for shaking people necessarily as like his calling card, but I'd feel confident that he maybe breaks a tackle and makes something happen. And I think that we would all be pretty happy with that if maybe it was like Cam's one-on-one in the hole and a great tackle and play is made where he's kind of reaching for the first down and he gets denied. I think in the moment it was, it just was a microcosm of what we saw all day, which felt like, hey, really good play call, really good play design. But unfortunately you do have to look at like, where are you getting beat on the day? And that's where, I don't know if as a coach in that moment, you're like, hey, this is, you know, the best option is to try to give Fifita a little bit of help on power here. And that seemed like what they tried to do, but then you also have to look at like, hey, you know, is that like, what's realistic here? And I think in the moment it felt like, man, we got so outcoached. And then reading that article, I was like, yeah, I don't think we necessarily got outcoached from a scheme perspective. I think maybe hindsight's 20/20, and it's like, I don't know if that was the right call there, but it also wasn't like we were getting 3 or 4 yards whenever we wanted either, you know? Yeah. And that's, I think, my frustration was like, we couldn't run the ball. Like we just right now, we're not a great running team. And it felt odd to go to that in that situation versus relying on like what you're really good at and letting someone like a Josh Kelly try to go make a play. You know, like I would have been much happier with that as the outcome than what happened.
And maybe the defense of Arbuckle on that one is we weren't really throwing the ball well either. So
yeah, totally.
I don't know. I mean, we tried so many different things, quick hitters, screens, like all sorts of stuff. Just, you know, with really limited success in general.
Right.
And, you know, we couldn't block him in the run. We also couldn't block him in the pass. Right. So I don't know. I mean, you know, again, maybe it's just, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, Arbuckle was sort of picking, you know, the least bad options and saying, right, well, you know, maybe we've been getting whipped up front, but if I can just scheme an advantage, we can mitigate that for one play and get ourselves a first down, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's what he's thinking. I'm not sure. But
regardless, I
think, again, you know, I a lot of times tend to look at things. I mean, you know, listeners know I'm a teacher, right? So I tend to kind of look at things from an educator perspective a lot. And I just kind of looked at this and went, all right, you know, again, winning games on the road is hard. This was bad. You're still 4-1. You're still going to be ranked. You've got a very winnable game next weekend.
Yep.
In Pullman.
Yep.
You know, you're coming back home for homecoming, playing another home game. And then also, you know, your offensive coordinator, I know people are always like, oh, he's 28 years old. Look at this. He's like a whiz kid, which is true. But also, there are elements of experience that come along with, you know, getting older, and this, I can speak to this from experience, right? Where it's like, okay, you know, I'm 46 years old. I know things now that I did not know then. You know, I've learned a lot of things since I was 28, and, you know, I sort of chalk this up and go like, yeah, like Arbuckle, if he's as good as we all think he is, this is going to be an experience where he's going to learn from it. And,
right,
and maybe the takeaway on, you know, that 4th-and-1 is, you know, maybe it's nothing like we're thinking about. Maybe it's legitimately just, you know, you know, I don't know. Good play. Got our ass kicked up front. Got to coach him up on the offensive line. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's it. Like, or maybe the lesson is, you know, well, we really need, you know, this was our measuring stick to find out exactly where our offensive line is. And now we know. It's like,
right, yeah,
I don't
sure
know. Like,
I think,
you know,
it'll,
I
be really
all
telling.
Of that is viable.
Yeah, I think it'll be really telling how they call the game on Saturday against Arizona, especially in short yardage situations, mm-hmm, you know, and kind of the, you know, what they believe they can get done against a defense that is nowhere near what UCLA is. Yeah. They're good. They're not a horrible defense, and, you know, by any stretch of the imagination in a lot of ways, but they're not
UCLA.
They're not UCLA.
They're not UCLA.
Yeah. One thing, you know, before moving off the topic of UCLA, just shout out to the defense, like 53
yes
rushing attempts against UCLA, 97 total plays, 24 more than they've faced all year. And they completely stifled UCLA, like they completely held them down. And, you know, I saw some people on Twitter that were like, you know, there's been 90-degree days in Pullman, yada, yada, yada. You know, we should have been, you can't use that as an excuse. It's like 53 rushing attempts, 97 total plays. You played almost a full quarter, at least more than you have all season.
Yes.
And they never broke your will. That's what I think Chip Kelly has historically been so good at, is finding that one thing and leaning on it and leaning on it until it breaks you. And, you know, we cannot stop these guys. And every single time the defense bowed up and came up with stops, came up with huge plays throughout the entire game.
Yep.
And I am so impressed by just how we scheme everything up, the passion they play with, the like no quit attitude. And you look at like how we're doing it with, you know, I mean, our linebackers are like 220 pounds. Like we are not these big guys. We're not also like speed demons out there either. This isn't some like speedy branded defense, right? You know, at least from like a branding perspective, we're just like tough as hell and don't give up. And we're super sound and super disciplined. And we, I think are super annoying and frustrating to play against as an offense. I think you come into it and you're like, we're going to move the ball, we're going to be okay. And I think that we just frustrate the heck out of you. Now, we're not some superstar defense where, you know, hey, we're going to be written about like some of the defenses in the past for the Cougs, but this is a defense that I think is going to put us in a really great position most games to be in a spot, especially looking at the rest of the schedule outside of, you know, Oregon and UW, to really be in a great spot for the most part to do some damage in conference play. And that was like what I love about what I always appreciated about Leach was our teams were so tough, like mentally tough. And I think that you could ask any opposing coach and they would say it is really hard to play the Cougs. It's really hard to go to Pullman. They just don't give up. They don't give up, and they're really well coached. And that's when, like, you know, we've talked about this many times. You have to spend a lot of time at roll those comments. Always felt like such bullshit because it was like, now this team is like the toughest people around. And I just feel like Dickert has like instilled that right away. And they're not the biggest, they're not the fastest, but they are not going to make it easy on you. And they're going to be very creative in how they scheme you up. And I think that that was pretty impressive. I mean, 53 carries and a bunch of them, like UCLA's running backs are not small. You know, they're not small guys.
No, Steele's he is a large battering ram of a human. And Chip Kelly, there was a pretty significant portion of the game where, you know, Steele was kind of all they had.
Right.
And to the degree that he had 22 or 24 carries like midway through the third quarter. Right. And it's like and there was you know, some discussion between us and a UCLA fan on Twitter, but it was like, you know, he was like, yeah, Carson Steele. Bah. And I'm just like, yeah, but like, I mean, yes, you know,
right.
You know, effective running back, you know, good player also can't carry the ball 40 times. Like that's not a thing. No. So, you know, at some point he's got to leave the field. And sure enough, kind of right after that, he left for, I think, two straight drives.
Right. Yeah.
As you know, and then came back, you know, to finish. But I would even argue, you know, in the fourth, he wasn't nearly as effective in the fourth quarter as he was like in the second and third quarter. And so, you know, I huge kudos to our defense. I think it's hard for people. I don't know. It's hard for me. I don't want to say it's hard for people to understand. That sounds belittling, but it's like, it's hard for me to communicate just how many plays that is that they were on the field. And what that does to a defense. So I think,
especially when you're not super deep either.
We're not
100%.
Right. I think with the new rules, the new clock rules, I want to say that like the average game is like 60-ish plays. I think,
I think that's right.
And so to be on the field for damn near 100, right? Dude, I mean, you said it's kind of an extra quarter. I mean, it's almost more like an extra half
of football. That's probably more that they were on the field.
Yeah. Which I mean, but that's the thing. Like you like when you say, oh, they were on the field for a whole extra quarter, like it sounds very dramatic. And then you start thinking about it and you're like, actually, I guess it might've been more like a half. Like that's crazy. Right. It's totally crazy.
And you're being put in tough, like, and we turned it over so many, like you're getting thrown back out onto the field after when you're thinking, hey, we're going to be in a much different situation. 100% different game state here of, you know, hey, we're inside their 10. Turn the ball over, et cetera. And like, I just think what's so impressive is when you look at like some of the stats going into the game, UCLA from like a rushing success rate perspective was ranked 18th in the country, 94th in pass, right? Not a great pass team, pretty solid rushing team. When you look at what Parker Fleming from Stats Award published about the game preview against Oregon State, they dropped in rushing success rate on offense to 47th in the country from 16th after playing us. And they dropped to 109th in passing success rate. Like the defense completely, you know, stifled them. It was just like, as much as we rail against counting stats, it was just a quantity situation where it's like, man, I mean, you just can't withstand a barrage like that, unfortunately. And that's where I just said, like, that's where I think as fans, that game was so frustrating is that I don't think that game plays out that. I don't think if it's one of those where it's like, hey, you play that game 10 times, the Cougs went 8 of them. I don't think it's that at all. I just think that was such a high variance game, and it was high variance in the most frustrating ways that were all for in many ways very disadvantageous toward the Cougs outside of a very helpful pick six that kept us in the game, obviously. But when you look at kind of like the rest of, especially the second half, man, it was just such a stodgy, frustrating game. And I just, I just don't think we're going to, I'll be very surprised if that happens to us against anyone other than Oregon from here on out.
Yeah. And so much of it was, you know, tied to the offense, right? Like the offense, three and outs, turnovers, you know, putting the defense in not the greatest positions, as you mentioned, that also contributes to the number of plays you're on the field as well. Right.
Right.
So, you know, is there another defense that can do to us what UCLA did? You mentioned Oregon. I think that's kind of the one that you think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Washington's defense is pretty good, but also I'm still skeptical. I could be wrong. That could be in, you know, a super elite defense. They just haven't
not
really
super elite.
Played anybody.
Not super elite, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't think so either, but I'm also like, I don't know. They haven't really played anybody. So,
right.
You know, we're obviously going to find out a lot, you know, next weekend when they play Oregon or this weekend when they play Oregon. But, you know, it's like, I just like, I'm not sure we're going to run into this issue again. I guess it's sort of the 10,000 foot view is that the unique set of circumstances here that led to this outcome. I just don't think we're going to face that again, except for again, maybe, you know, next week against Oregon. You know, that's at Autzen. You know, that's going to be a super big challenge. You know, that might be another one of those games, but I'm not convinced Oregon is going to present the same kind of challenge that UCLA did. They don't have the same, I mean, they've got a good defense, but they don't have the same kinds of guys up front. I don't think, again, I could end up looking very stupid here, but I don't think they have the same kinds of guys up front that UCLA does. And, you know, if they're not able to manhandle us up front in the same fashion, you know, the weakest part of our offense, you know, perhaps it's a little different, it's a little different story there. Let's talk about Arizona just a little bit. Jaden Delora Bowl 2, except I don't think he's going to play. He hasn't played in a couple of weeks, I think. They've got their own Fifita, Noah Fifita, who's pretty good. You know, played really well against USC last week. They sort of, you know, put a bit of a scare into the Trojans. Not a huge shock, given what Alex Grinch is doing or not doing down there. Somehow that, I don't know, somehow that guy, you know,
here's a stat for you as I was prepping for this that I was laughing about. Okay. So, when you look at the Pac-12 percent of plays over 20 plus yards, of course, USC is last.
Oh my God.
Like they just like, I'm like, that guy needs to give 50% of his annual earnings to Hercules Mata'afa
because
just got that guy every, like, it's just truly impressive.
I just don't like, you can't keep like coaching is not a, this is not a profession where like people with bad results just keep their jobs because of something they did 10 years ago. Like,
right. Totally.
Typically this is a, hey man, 2 years, this is not working. You got to go. But it's like, holy shit. I don't know what, I don't know if him and Lincoln Riley have become best friends. Like truly, I don't know the answer here because it's like the defenses at Oklahoma were not good and the defenses at USC are not good. And this is like, I think he was the DC at Oklahoma for the last 2 years. Riley was there and now we're on the second year here at USC. So we're kind of on a 4 year track record of, you know, and look, much love to Alex Grinch for what he did with our defense. Like that was huge. And I love him for it and all of those things, but also like it's kind of looking like kind of a one trick pony. Like, you know, when you're in Pullman, you play a high variance system because that's kind of what you have to do, you know, high risk, high pressure, high, whatever. Okay. We might, you know, give up some stuff, but we're also going to get some big negative plays. And this is just kind of how we have to do it. Right. You don't have to do it that way at Oklahoma. You don't have to do it that way at USC. Like right, maybe this is not the style to be playing. Maybe you don't need to play those little games where the defensive line shifts. Like, you know, you're fucking USC. Like, you've got all these.
Just go be dudes, man. You're
tanks up front. Like, just let them go, like, wreck people. So we're not trying to make this the Alex Grinch show. But Arizona did have some success against them. I think at this point, it's pretty inarguable that our defense is better than USC's defense. Maybe not as talented by a recruiting, metric, but definitely better from a production standpoint. And, you know, Arizona, you know, maybe there was something to the fact that, you know, Fifita, not a lot out there on him. You know, he comes in, he does his thing, lots of, you know, heart. He's not a very big guy, right? You know, not a huge arm, but, you know, kind of just was out there getting the job done. You know, maybe a week of film, you know, for our defense, maybe exposes some things where we could take advantage of him, or maybe Jaden Delora plays, but that's sounding pretty doubtful. I mean, I for one would like for him to play.
I mean,
all the reasons.
100%. I mean, the big difference is that he's not as nearly as turnover prone as Jaden Delora is. Right. But, He's also not necessarily like he had 5.9 yards per attempt against UW, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. USC is not a good defense, had 8.7 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. That game obviously went to overtime. And he across 35 attempts, got to 300 yards, completed 71% of his passes, you know. So, I mean, he's a solid quarterback to be real. I also, though, like, I don't know if he's necessarily a huge upgrade over Delora, other than at least thus far, he is not throwing a ton of interceptions. I also don't really know if those two defenses are necessarily the most ball hawking defenses, though, either. Where they're, you know, coming in and really taking the ball. I mean, well, UW's got 8 picks, thus far, but, you know, USC only has 4, right? So, I mean, it's not necessarily like, USC is necessarily that kind of takeaway ball ethos. So I think their offense is good. They've got, I was joking around that running back whose name is failing me right now that had such a good game against USC. I think he's number 3. He just looks like one of those like 16-pound bowling balls, you know, where you're like, oh, I could toss one of those, man. And then you end up like with tennis elbow afterward, you know, like the dude is just like a truck. And he was making some progress against USC, and their offensive success rate in rushing is second in the country right now. You know, 57% of their plays are successful on offense when they run the ball. They're very similar, but WSU was ranked 10th in terms of offensive success rate going into the game against UCLA. We dropped to 27th after the game, right? We just got manhandled by them, unfortunately. I just don't know if Arizona has necessarily played a really great defense, and that's kind of why the success rate is where it's at, or maybe they're, you know, going to pose some big challenges for us. I think for me, like, their defense seems to be pretty middle of the road. They're not great versus the pass. They're 105th in yards per attempt in the country. And they're one of 4 teams in college football that has no interceptions. So when you're a very pass heavy team like us, and that's going to be, you know, what you're going to try to do is throw the ball, that at least bodes well that we're, you know, 5-6 games in, they have no interceptions. Yeah. And they're 11th in the Pac-12 in terms of percentage of plays that go for 20 plus yards, right? The only team that's worse than them is USC. And it's not necessarily like they're doing a great job of keeping teams to just like 10 yards and kind of keeping you off schedule. They're 10th in the Pac-12 in percent of plays that go for 10 plus yards, right? They're not great on third down. Like there's all of these things that seem to be really setting up nicely for our offense. The only thing that has me concerned is they're pretty good against the run on defense, and they're decent on early downs. And that's really what bit us against UCLA, is that we could not get to a spot where we had makeable third downs and we could leverage our exceptional, caliber that we had been on third down leading up to the UCLA game. So it really, I think, comes down to if we can stay on schedule, then I think we're going to move the ball all over the field. And it really becomes, you know, how do you sustain drives, give the defense a break after a hot road game that was really a game and a half. And I'm hopeful that, you know, it ends up kind of how the Oregon State and Wisconsin games went at home, where you jump on them early, maybe you make a big play defensively, and then you kind of ride it out and you win by 8 to 12 points.
Yep. Offensively, Arizona, I think the part of them that maybe scares me the most, they have two really, really good receivers.
Yes.
McMillan is super, super good. He's big. He's fast. He, you know, we got introduced to him last year. He's only a sophomore, which is kind of insane. And then they've got Jacob Cowing, who is kind of their possession receiver, but also I was actually kind of surprised. Like, he has almost 8 receptions a game, but only is averaging like 8 yards a catch, because he's pretty explosive also.
Right.
Now maybe they're utilizing him in such a way that, you know, he's not being, you know, put in a position to pick up big plays, but he is definitely kind of a scary, dangerous guy. So they have those guys. Those kinds of things, you know, sort of maybe worry you a little bit, especially with the McMillan 6'5". That size, you know, kind of makes you, because, you know, our corners are not the biggest dudes in the world. Sometimes you kind of worry about that a little, but you know, I don't ever worry too much, because, you know, you mentioned we're disciplined. We play hard. We, you know, all these things. Under Dickert, it seems like it's kind of like when we were under Leach with offense, right? Like, the defense is just, they're going to be fine. Like, I don't worry about the defense. I mean, maybe they're going to, you know, at some point get, you know, blown away by some dudes, and, you know, that just happens. But, you know, for the most part, I just kind of look and go, they're going to be fine, you know,
Right. And yeah. They're
going to have a sound game plan. They're going to be, you know, where they need to be. They're going to know their assignments. They're going to be fine. And so when I look at all that, I think, you know, yeah, like, this is a game we should win. You know, I don't think there's any doubt we're a better team than Arizona. I will say that, the opening line, which was, Cougs -9, sort of raised my eyebrow, because that seemed like a lot. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know. That seems like a lot. But, I also, one of the, you know, places that I consult a lot, I go to the predictiontracker.com, which is sort of like a huge aggregator of predictive models. And it basically takes all those models, you know, literally dozens of people who have put together, you know, predictive models, S&P plus FPI, right? All these ones, plus all a whole bunch that you've never heard of. And, you know, we are, let me look here. Let me scroll down. The prediction tracker model, when you aggregate all of the predictions, we are somewhere between 9 and 10 points better than Arizona, based off the results of the year. And so maybe this is just sort of our Cougness coming out, and the models all are fairly close together in terms of how they see it. The prediction standard deviation, which is a number that's not going to mean anything to anybody, but it's a shade under 4. That's kind of on the low end of standard deviation in terms of the predictions. So that means that, you know, for people who don't know what standard deviation is, basically it just means that the models are not super spread out in terms of their predictions.
Right.
You know, it's a little more toward the middle. Under 4 is a pretty low number for this. And so,
and when,
you know,
it comes to college football,
just,
Vegas always knows.
Yes. So maybe we are, you know, maybe we're being a little too worrisome. Maybe there's the recency bias of UCLA, the recency bias of Arizona against USC. And we're just kind of going, I don't know. Maybe we come out and we, you know, slap them around, but that's probably a good place to like do a prediction here. So I usually do the prediction first because Craig asked me first, but since Craig is not here, I'm going to ask you for the prediction. So to put you on the spot,
yeah,
what do you think, Cougs? I have a feeling you're going to go with the Cougs. So when you do, what's score going to be? Go ahead.
I think that it's going to be Cougs 37, Arizona 32. So I think it's going to be a game that is, you know, unfortunately, we're not a great team. We're not going to cover. But I think that we're going to be kind of similar to last year's game, where we're going to be out in front in the second half, and I think Arizona is going to give us a little bit of nervousness toward the end. You know, there's a couple things when it comes to offense versus the defensive matchup. Like, Arizona just is one of the worst teams in field position, and we are one of the better teams on offense in field position. Some of that's from the defense has been forcing turnovers, et cetera. And I just have to hope that, like, our fumble luck just gets better, right? We've lost six fumbles thus far.
Which
is crazy. We do have a fumbling problem, though. That is real. So that
is real.
That is, like, we've got to figure that out. So so long as we don't have, you know, slippery hands back home, I think that it's going to actually be a pretty comfortable victory, even though the scoreline won't look quite as comfortable. But what do you got?
Yeah, so I'm also going to go with the Cougs. I've done that in every game this year, so, and I've been right 4 out of 5 times, so, you know, whatever. I do think that the effect on the defense is going to be real. I don't know to what degree. I'm really glad the game's in Pullman. I think that's a big deal. I haven't really looked at the weather. So let's take a look really quick and see what the weather says about Pullman. Hold on. All right. So there we go. Okay. So the weather in Pullman on Saturday is predicted to be cloudy and 65. So pretty mild, which is good. So with those conditions, I'm going to go ahead and like you, I'm going to predict a high scoring affair. I'm going to go even a little bit higher, and I'm going to say that we end up winning 41-35. I'm not sure how it plays out, but I do have a feeling it's going to be a high scoring affair. I don't think Arizona can really slow us down, but I do think the defense is really going to feel some legit effects from that game against UCLA. So I'm going to go 41-35. Cougs win, don't cover, and Arizona. Now I would be absolutely tickled if we were both, you know, proved to be full of shit and like that the offense is like psh and the defense like psh. Down the field. If that happened, I'd be like, yeah, this is kind of the team that we thought they were, but
we shall see. Yeah. I think Cougs, you know, if you can get to Pullman, get there, it's homecoming. I think it's going to be a pretty fun day out on the Palouse. I love our offense. I'm a little nervous if we're still pretty banged up at the receiver position. Maybe we run into some trouble there, but I think that there's a lot to like about what we can do on offense and how we match up against Arizona's defense. And it really just becomes like, hey, can you jump on them early? Can you force a couple turnovers, which we are doing right now? And really just like be aggressive and convert when you've got your scoring opportunities. Like that just, you know, you think back like, hey, how different is that UCLA game? If you just get a field goal, not even a touchdown, on that second drive versus fumbling, right? You know, how much does that change the game? And so as long as we can keep that under control, I'm a Jake Dickert is actually pretty innovative and hires cool offenses truther. And I think Arbuckle is going to come and he's going to learn and he's going to cook. Like, I think that everything we've seen thus far from him is that he's got a pretty bright mind, pretty bright future, and he can scheme up some really fun stuff. And I think that he's going to do that.
Yep. All right. So with that, let's move on to the second half of the show. We used to take a break when we had ads and stuff, but we don't have that anymore. So, we will just move on.
What kind of fake ad should we read right now?
Yeah. You know, O'Toole's, pipe cleaning solvent or something. I don't know. I'm not very creative and I'm not very funny. So, that was kind of the best I could do on the spot. All right. So let's talk beer real quick, because we have to keep the tradition alive. So I will throw it to you first. Zane, what are you drinking?
When it comes to beer, IPAs and all that jazz is like, if I took a shot of Benadryl that I crushed up sleeping pills and poured the sleeping pills into the shot ahead of time, just straight go, you know, one IPA and I'm asleep. Yeah. So I'm drinking a pale ale from Johnny, Utah. Shout out Georgetown Brewing. Yeah. And we like beer, and that's one of the beers that it's like, if I'm trying to step it up from like a lawnmower beer, of like a reindeer, which is often my go-to. That's usually what I'm doing. So I felt like in honor of you and Craig, I had to not drink a Coors Light or a Rainier and step it up.
I love that. I would absolutely not make fun of you for drinking those beers, man. Those are fantastic. And they have a time and a place, right?
That's right.
All right. So for me, it is fresh hop season, which is probably my favorite time of year in terms of beer drinking. There are many reasons why fall is amazing, but this is from a beer standpoint. This is one of those things. So every year, you know, we talk about fresh hop season. It's the hop harvest. They brew the beers with super fresh, basically straight off the farm hops. There are some beers that are brewed like literally within hours of the harvest of the hops. And so you get this like super fresh. It's very earthy, very sort of dank sometimes, flavors and aromas and all sorts of cool stuff. And it's funny, like I always say that fresh hop season is one of my favorites. I'm not sure if I really, I don't know if this is going to sound weird or not, but like, I'm not positive if the beer tastes that great to me, or if it's just unique and different. I only get it once a year. And so the scarcity makes me like it. Like, I'm not sure which of those it is. I think I like it. I believe that
I believe you like it. I believe in you. I mean, everything you're saying sounds good, even as a not like a beer guy, like fresh hops. Yeah. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. And it's definitely like, I mean, the flavors are really intense, tend to be really intense. And I kind of like that as well. So I've been, you know, kind of hoarding fresh hop beers. Went out to Beer Star last week, had a bunch of fresh hops, bought, you know, like five fresh hops while I was there. So this is one of them. So tonight's beer is the, Rubens Brews. Fresh hop. So Rubens Brews is a Seattle brewery. Fresh hop Rubens Gorgeous IPA. This is their West Coast India Pale Ale.
Nice.
So it's very very West. Yeah, very West Coasty. Clear, crisp, piney, all of that good stuff that you expect sort of out of an old school IPA. I will say, maybe not my favorite one I've had so far. The one I had last night was the Stoop Fresh Hop Fiend, which is annually one of my favorites. And that one last night definitely did not disappoint. This one, I'm not sure how much I like it. It's good, just different. But, it feels kind of maybe a little more experimental. So, yeah, but I'm definitely enjoying it still. Just maybe That's not great. My favorite one that I've had so far.
Cool label. What's the label that you're working with here?
Yeah. So labels are always good. So it's the Rubens Brews R. So if anybody's ever seen, that's like a cursive, like lowercase. R. And then like sort of inside the R is a farm, right? With the hops kind of growing up. So, and as we've talked about many, 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 many times before, on the podcast, this is really like the region for fresh hop beers, because Yakima grows the vast majority of the country's hops,
right?
And not just the country, but also export to other parts of the world as well. So so we are sort of like, our breweries around here really sort of specialize in fresh hop beers.
Right.
And so this one says, some beers remind us that there's beauty and simplicity. The combination of ingredients in this limited release add up to an aromatic West Coast style IPA that leans into notes of passion fruit, honeydew, white grape, and bright citrus, especially orange. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I tasted all that, but that's what they said.
Notes of leather and volcanic ash.
Long-time listeners of the podcast will know that like Craig can taste all of these things, and I'm just like, dude, the beer's good. So, for this special batch, we sourced the freshest hops from the Yakima Valley. So
there you go. So shout out Yakima Valley. Let's go. I feel like are you even a dad in the Pacific Northwest if you don't have a Rubens Brews sticker on your Thule? You know,
it's true. That is true. I'm assuming that means you do.
I actually don't, shockingly enough. I need to. I'm a big, as you know, Thule sticker guy. That's
yes, you
like
are.
How
yes,
I
you are.
how I processed all of my sports pain and angst was yep, just adding yep. to that. But it's. I think I actually have a Rubens. I think I have a sticker like in my garage. I just haven't put on the Thule yet. So I'll. I got to do that next time I pull it out.
I do have a Rubens Brews sticker on my computer. Does that
count? There, that counts.
Because
yeah,
I'm a sticker I'm a sticker on computer guy.
Yeah, so some people get weird about their cars and stuff. You don't want to put stickers on anything car related. I get that. Yeah. So yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that works. Yeah.
All right. All right. So let's move on to our last couple topics here. We got volleyball. We got soccer. As we mentioned at the very top of the show, it was kind of shitty end of the weekend for both of them. Let's start with volleyball, because volleyball was, playing again, as we said, one of the most anticipated, sporting events in Pullman in quite some time. Definitely one of the most highly anticipated volleyball matches.
Yes.
In quite some time. And they've played some big ones, because Jen Greeny has built an incredible program.
Dude, shout out to her, man. Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. In fact, I think on the last podcast, I said that I wanted to hug her, so I mean, I don't take it back, but just know that in a totally not creepy way, let's just establish that.
I just love first time I took Avery, Ellison, Marlo, took the kids to Pullman was mm-hmm. in November of 21 for the Arizona football game. Volleyball was playing Oregon. And it was the first time my kids had seen like true competition at the collegiate level up close and personal, where like you don't have to be a good sport necessarily. and we were just so competitive, and we're just completely like Oregon's vibe was very much like, you don't belong on the same court as us. And we were like, oh, really? And that just came out from the coaching staff, the players, interactions between everybody. And it just created such a cool vibe. And it was fun being back for when we played BYU earlier this year. And the team just looks so confident, so impressive. They're just just incredibly athletic. It's like so fun to watch. And she's done an incredible job building that team. So shout out to her. I think the disappointment was like this really felt, if we could, and we were close to, it wasn't like we got blown out, right? It's like, I know we lost 3-1. It was, every match was close. And it was one of those moments where if the Cougs win, it's like, we're going to win the Pac-12. And that's not necessarily, I mean, it's technically not out of reach, but I mean, it's such a good conference for volleyball that it's obviously tough if you don't beat Stanford. But I think that's where I felt most disappointed coming out of it, was just like, oh man, it felt like right there, where we could really do something, truly special in the regular season. But I can't wait to just see how the rest of the season plays out, how the postseason plays out, because they are very good. The only time I've seen them in person was that BYU match. Yep. And it was like, BYU was good. Like, they were a really good squad. And watching it was like, man, the reason that sometimes the way these matches play out, where maybe the Cougs fall behind in the first set, it's because their opponents are pulling out all the stops, because they know they're up against a truly great team. And if they don't pull out all the stops early, they know they're going to fall behind and be in a really, really rough spot, which just makes it super fun. It's like when you can show up and watch a match and watch a game, and you know that your team just has that swag. It's so fun, which is what made, the swag was there. There were some incredible plays against Stanford, and it was just like, it was just disappointing that, it almost kind of feels like that, like what we were talking about with UCLA from a football perspective. It's like sometimes the people on the other side are just having a really great game, and the sports can be on a razor's edge, especially at the highest levels like that. Two top five teams, it's like, every single set, can be swung by one or two plays, and all of a sudden you lose 3-1, and it's like, a couple of those, moments go your way, and the score is completely flipped.
The match was completely insane from the very beginning. Like, the first set was 31-29 Stanford. So for those who don't follow volleyball all that closely, they play till 25. And if they are tied, basically, and you have to win by two, right? So the first set goes all the way to 31-29
which is so crazy.
Like, yes.
Two top five teams. And that's so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like right off the top.
Right.
And
the
energy in Bowler was bonkers. It was everything that it was hyped up to be. It was super intense. It was two extremely high level teams. It was very even, you know, the hitting percentages in the first set, Stanford had a bit of an advantage, but it was only 280. They were only hit 283. The way I've been told to kind of think of it is that like hitting percentages, good hitting percentages would equate to a good batting average in baseball. So to have a 283 hitting percentage, maybe not where Stanford typically resides, you know, and it just was a battle. And the first set was a battle, 31-29. Second set was a battle, 29-27, but Stanford picks up both of them. That's a huge hole to have to dig out of.
Right.
You know, regardless of how good you are, and then especially against a squad like Stanford, you know, that is a tall, tall, tall task. And, you know, you end up looking back and you just kind of think like, you know, maybe you regret a little bit, right? That you didn't get one of those first, not a little bit, you regret a lot that you didn't get one of those right. first two sets. Especially when, I'm almost certain that WSU had leads in both of them. Not early leads, like sort of like leads in the teens. And so, you know, it's, well, you look at that and you go, ugh, it's so tough, but you know, it's, you still have to be, you know, impressed even in defeat with what they did. They came back, they won the third set, you know, 25-23. And then in the fourth set, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know if running out of gas, you know, is a thing in volleyball, but if it is, maybe that's kind of what happened. You know, Stanford has their highest hitting percentage in that set. They hit 370 in that set after not hitting higher than 283 in any previous set.
And which is like, WSU, get out of here, Stanford, you know, like, that's so nuts. Totally.
And then we hit 167. In that fourth set, you know, so that's really the difference there. I think the thing, just kind of looking at the stats, and it sort of reinforces what I saw with my eyes, is that, you know, when you watch Stanford, it was like, again, like you sort of referenced, like they've just got those dudes, isn't the right term because they're not dudes, but you know what I mean? It's like, they've just got those,
they're good.
The players.
They're great,
you know,
players.
They're just really good, really talented players. And as I was watching the matches, I kept thinking, like, there were times where I just kept thinking, man, Stanford just has these incredible players. And, you know, when they get, you know, a shot at a kill, like they just send these missiles that are just, man, it's tough. And, but you know, we were right there, like the whole time. And I mean, you look at that second set that was, you know, so the first set, second set. So first set, we lose 31-29, you know, we only hit 225 and damn near won the set. And then second set, we hit 136.
I know. Yeah.
And damn near won the set. Like we were so tough defensively, both, you know, blocking was, you know, kind of hit and miss at times, but our ability to pick up digs, I don't know if that's the right term. I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, but to dig out, you know, kills and keep balls alive, was really remarkable. And I think that it was hard to walk away from the match not believing that Stanford is more talented. You know, in the fourth set that really took over, they had, you know, Baird and Kip, I think were their two names, and they were just like they were insane. Like every time they got a shot at a kill, like they were sending these missiles over the net. But to hit sort of as poorly as we did in the first two sets and damn near win them, and then the third set have a good hitting set with, you know, 316, you know, and that's the one that you win, like, okay, you're feeling pretty good heading into the fourth. And then again, they just sort of, like, Stanford's athletes took over in that fourth set. But I don't think there's any way to walk away from that match really anything but encouraged. Like, there was nothing about that where you're like, you know, I think sometimes we, as Cougs, get a little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes.
Yeah.
Like when a team is highly ranked or highly thought of and we're like, do we really belong? They absolutely proved that they 100% absolutely belonged right up there with Stanford. And that was extremely cool.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much to take away from the entire match that is super encouraging in terms of this team really hopefully makes a very deep run in the NCAA tournament. You know, that they did hang the entire way, and I think we're Stanford's equal throughout the whole thing. You know, I mean, you see those first two sets and you know, my only question was just kind of the aces for Stanford. I don't know if that was something where that's just better players making plays. That just seemed kind of crazy, like so many for them.
They employ a high risk strategy with their serves. Like they definitely are super aggressive with their serves, which results in a fair number of aces, also results in a fair number of service errors. Like there were
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. So this what I'm looking at here, this box score is not showing me service errors, but they definitely, okay, here we go. They had 19 service errors to go with
Ooh,
their
okay.
10 aces.
10 aces. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there you go.
So, and by contrast, we had the same, so that's like a 2-to-1 ratio, right? 2-to-1 ratio or 1-to-2 ratio of aces to errors. We also had the same 1-to-2 ratio of aces to errors, except it was one ace and two errors.
Two errors, right? Yeah,
So,
totally. Yeah.
yeah, so that's a pretty big
Yeah.
difference. And you know, Stanford definitely kept us in it at times with the errors. But I also think, you know, there's some level of that that's a little bit of a compliment. You know, I mean
Right.
they are aggressive with their serves, and they felt like that was something that, you know, they needed to do and was advantageous to them. That they needed to be aggressive. And you know, I would imagine maybe against a lesser opponent, I don't know, maybe they
Right.
just do what they do, but also maybe they go, eh, you know, let's make sure to tone down the errors, you know, so we don't keep a team in it that
Right.
doesn't belong.
Let's
You
get out
know,
of here in
so
three sets, you know. Yeah, that's right.
exactly.
Yeah.
So
The main
yeah.
thing that stood out to me seeing the Cougs in person and was the like and this came across, you know, on TV with this match against Stanford, more so on the Stanford side, was but just a shout out to like Katie Ryan
Yeah.
and to Iman Isanovich.
Yep.
Forgive me if I mispronounced the first name there. I watching them play and really seeing, you know, like Kip and Baird and everybody from the Stanford side, this kind of played out too. I was mostly reminded of at the end of every Major League Baseball season, there's this Twitter account called the Pitching Ninja. I can't remember the guy's name, but he has a YouTube channel and profile is just like the impressive nature of Major League pitching. And the last couple of seasons, he's tweeted out like all of the pitches that are like middle that are plus 102 miles an hour, just to show that like you just can't hit something that fast, right? Like I think this last
Right.
season of all there was like two hits of everything that was like 101 or 102 miles per hour or faster that was like right down the middle. And watching Katie Ryan and like our team, I'm like, there's just nothing you can do. Like it's just they are so athletic and powerful. Watching them go for the kill is like, yeah, I don't know what you expect the opponent to try and do, because the angles that they can select and the placement is so inch perfect, and then it's going like 1,000 miles an hour. It's just like mock Jesus off their hand.
Yes.
You know, I remember like watching the UW game, they were just like drilling it off the faces of UW players at one point,
Yes.
of just kind
It
of like
was pretty
you.
hilarious.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, it's just one of those, like when you see, it's kind of like, you know, back like when the Sonics were still here and Ray Allen showed up and you were like, yep, that's greatness. And you just kind of know when you're watching it and watching this team, it's just very obvious that, you know, we've recruited some players that are truly exceptional, and it's really fun to watch them. So, you know, if you're a West Side Coug and you can't get over for a game, you know, let's take over Heck Ed on November 24th when our Cougs
I'm
come and
planning on
close the
that.
season out against
I'm
UW.
planning on that.
Let's do it. You know, I'd highly recommend it because this is a team that is super fun to watch, and you know, shout out to the volleyball team.
Well, and they're an extremely cool story in the sense that they're sort of everything that we want Cougs to be. Like they all, So they've got a team loaded with sixth year players, players who right. had the COVID year, didn't have to yep. take it, decided to take it because they all wanted to come back and play together. And I do think that this group has a pretty special bond and wanted to do something pretty special. And so they came back and that's what they're doing. And again, you know, to sort of bring it back where we started, like it's a huge testament to Jen Greeney and a huge testament to the program she's built that, you know, she's fostered a family environment where players want to be there, but also like she has fostered an environment where the players are, they've definitely got her personality, right? Like I think that teams, you know, you talked about Leach earlier and the toughness, right? You know, this is kind of a similar kind of deal. Like I remember watching Jen Greeney, but she was Jen Stinson when I was in college and we were yeah. in college together. You know, we were I think we're the same age or very close to it. And you know, and she had that edge too, you know, back then. And so, you know, you can just see that the team's got that edge. You know, they are sort of like there's a belief that we are amazing, but also an understanding that probably everybody else looks at us as Cougs and it's the Coug versus everybody kicks yeah. in, right? Like they just have that. And so, yeah, it's a very cool thing. I'm looking forward to watching them for the remainder of the year. They do host Utah and Colorado this weekend, both teams that are fairly middling in the Pac-12 right now that they should handle fairly easily. And then the following week is when they have a bit of a test. They go on the road, face USC on October 20th. USC is one of the teams, one of the many teams right now that's in a log jam in the top five. Stanford is 6-0, and then you've got Arizona State, Oregon, us, and USC all at 5-1, which is kind of insane.
Totally crazy.
It appears that there's sort of a very good tier to the Pac-12 and a very bad tier to the Pac-12 with only maybe a couple of teams in the middle.
Yeah,
because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 teams that have one win or less, one win or fewer in the Pac-12. So that's something to they should roll this weekend. All right, soccer really quick. As we mentioned, also at the top, really, really shitty end of the weekend there. I kind of hoped.
Man. It's just like that's, yeah.
God damn it. I kind of hoped that the win against Arizona where they came back, they were down 1-0 and then came back to win that game 2-1. Let me think again. They may have been up 1-0 and then I think that's what it was. They were up 1-0 and then Arizona scored to tie it up. And I had turned the game on when it was 1-0 and then literally like a minute later, Arizona scored to make it 1-1. And I'm like, damn it. And I sent a text to Craig and I was like, bad timing. And then I had to stop watching it. And then later I got the email that said that they'd actually come back to win it, which was, you know, super awesome. So, anyway, like that you're thinking, okay, you know, maybe we're onto something. And then Arizona State happened. I did watch a good chunk of that game. That game, we also had a 1-0 lead. Margie DeTrizio, the team's, you know, star striker, center forward, is, you know, she had a really great play where she got the ball at the edge of the box with her back to goal, ends up splitting a couple of defenders, and then really just roofs it from like about 10 yards out, just rips it into the roof above the keeper. And then it was just sort of all downhill from there. They end up getting someone sent off. Just which you don't see very often in college soccer.
That's
pretty damn rare. Yeah. Not that it's super common anywhere else, but it's really rare in college soccer. So they get someone sent off. It really all falls apart. And, you know, they just continue to struggle with injuries, missing key players. You know, they were supposed to be a pretty experienced squad. A number of those experienced players remain out and injured. And the way that they like to play soccer, which is pretty direct, route one type stuff, you know, hoof it up the field, knock the ball down, win second balls. It's all soccer parlance for kick it up the field, trust your players to sort of like win a ball and then advance it that way versus building with shorter passes. Just it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle right now. And they either aren't willing to try and build the other way, or they, you know, feel like they can't, or they maybe they try and it's just super bad. But what it seems to me is that they just are not able to play their preferred style. And this is now sort of putting them in a position where, you know, they have not won very many Pac-12 games in the last like year and a half.
Right.
I think they've won one in the last like year and a half, Pac-12 game. And, you know, maybe there's something to, I don't know, like how much do you buy into the idea that maybe this is, you know, there's a familiarity thing. Like, do you feel like that stylistically teams knowing what the Cougs are trying to do, especially if it's, you know, being direct and those sorts of things, like maybe not having the athletes right now.
Yeah.
Like does all, how much does all of that play into this run of form that they're on right now?
I think it's got to play in a little bit. You know, I think the, you can, when you have legit professional starters on your team that you're trying to, you know, out on the end of route one, when that is your style, that helps a lot. And then it kind of feels like maybe this is the last two seasons is a bit of a gap year in terms of having those true top end players. I mean, there's three top 100 freshmen on the squad right now. And maybe it's just that they're a little bit young. And you know, that I would definitely understand, like, in collegiate soccer, that choosing that style, right? I feel like you're probably, as a coach, feeling like you're mitigating a lot of risks in that way. And also putting your players in a really good position to be successful and say, hey, this is like our philosophy, our identity is we want to get a lot of shots on goal. I think the challenge right now is it feels like our opponents know that's the plan. And so they're forcing us into very low percentage of going in type of shots. So maybe there's a lot of shots. It's just ends up in a lot of goal kicks for our opponents, not necessarily a lot of true chances, which is, you know, tough to watch at times. And you know, but hopefully they get it turned around. I mean, they've got a tough test against Cal this Friday down in Berkeley. And then, you know, hopefully the slate with Colorado and Utah, you know, at home, they can make something happen. And, you know, the good news is like, hey, the back half of this schedule is one that should theoretically be favorable. And maybe they're
definitely
able to,
played all their, we mentioned that last week, like playing Stanford, USC and UCLA, you know, bang, bang, bang. Like
that's tough out.
That's tough a out. Really, really tough start, to conference play. And, you know, and so hopefully like, you know, they're able to get some people healthy. They're able to, you know, start maybe putting some wins together against some teams that are beatable, you know, Cal, Colorado, Utah. I mean, those are the three teams immediately in front of them in the standings. But none of them seem to be world beaters. Colorado has the best overall record of that bunch at 10-3-1, but 2-2-1 in conference. And I don't think that they haven't played USC and UCLA yet. I don't know if they've played Stanford, but, cause they play USC and UCLA this weekend. So, you know, those are, in theory, those are teams that are beatable. We'll see if that happens. If you can start doing that and get healthy, you know, maybe you can make a push to get back into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. What's your take on, or perspective on, like, what do they have to do to try to actually make a realistic push?
Yeah. I mean,
is it win out? Or is it
that's a great question. I don't think it's win out. I mean, I think like it's clear at this point, they're not on the tier with Stanford, UCLA and USC, but everybody else is a notch below that. Like those three are clearly, they're all sitting on 15 points after five games. Like all three of those teams are undefeated, 5-0-0 after five conference games. And then sitting in fourth is Arizona State, which of course just, you know, put it on you last weekend. But, you know, after that, it's like, I think what you really need to do is, I think there's a recognition always that the Pac-12 is a really tough soccer conference. So I think you've always got that going for you. And then beyond that, you just need to sort of like show yourself to be among the best of the others. Right. So, and especially, and this is the other thing, like the NCAA, and I can't say for sure that soccer does this to a great degree, but we know from watching, you know, men's and women's basketball tournament selections pretty closely that selection committees do take into account injuries. You know, right. So if we start getting people yeah. healthy and we start peeling off some wins, especially against some of these teams that are maybe in this, you know, this lower tier of the conference, and you can start distinguishing yourself from those teams again as you get healthy, then the committee can look and go, well, you know, this, they were, you know, as I'm looking, we were what, 7-1, right? We were 7-1 before we started Pac-12 play at 1-4, right?
Right.
So this team was 7-1, mostly healthy through that stretch. They get injured. They play some really tough teams. They have a rough start. And then you start piling up some wins as you get healthy. I think that's a narrative that you can sell to a committee to try and, you know, get them to pick you to go back in the tournament. So I don't think it's hopeless.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, getting back home against some teams that are beatable, I think will be obviously beneficial for them. So I think there's a chance. Not a expert soccer bracketologist, but
sure, yeah,
it certainly seems like that's kind of how these things go.
Yeah, I mean USC's 13th, Stanford is second in the country, UCLA is fifth. You know, so it's not like they're dropping games to teams they necessarily shouldn't be. So hopefully they go on a run, and we're, you know, making a push again if we get healthy. That's another one I would say is, if you can't get to Pullman for November 4th, or maybe if you're leaving in the morning, get yourself to Montlake November 3rd, pack it out. One of the funnest memories I have watching soccer is being there with Craig in 2021, just all the dubs down, great game. We were scoring banger after banger. So hopefully that happens again against UW. And I would say I'm going to be in Pullman and I'm leaving that Friday, so I can't go, unfortunately. But if I was there, I would say that Sounders and Cougars is the same amount of syllables. So we've got lots of material for, you know, come on, Cougars, score a goal, etc. To get some terrace chants out there for our Cougs. And hopefully, you know, we can hear you on the Pac-12 nets if you're in the building. So, you know, look for Twitter, and we'll maybe if you're going to be there, you know, say where to sit, get a little Coug contingent going, and let's turn some Sounders chants into Coug ones and show up.
Yeah,
take one from the dogs.
I think we will try to maybe put something together there a little bit. I am planning on going to that. I am planning on going to the volleyball game. I will bring my children. They will yell loudly at the other team and at the other fans. So hopefully they won't get me in trouble. But I also know that you are familiar with children yelling loudly at other people. So
that's correct. It's in the Murfitt family crest, you know, yell loudly at others.
I know. Yeah. Given the things you've told me about some of your family interactions, extended family interactions, I'm like, yeah, that tracks. So. Zane's from Montana. Zane's family's from Montana, if that gives you any indication of kind of how that goes. And they're Irish. So they're Irish
and they're
from Montana. So there you go. All right. So Zane, I am pleased to inform you that we have absolutely held up the tradition of Podcast Versus Everyone of talking way too long.
If you're still here, shout out to you. Cheers to you. 132 minute hour and a half in.
Yeah. So the thing that cracks me up about this is Craig always does like the socials and everything else at the end. And I'm like, dude, nobody's left. I mean this in like the most honest, sincere way possible. Like I can look at the data, like I can see how long people listen to the episodes, and I can see that it's like people listen. And then we talk about beer and then it's like, and then like drops off. It just gets, just gets less and less and less and less and less over like the last 30 minutes. So, as a matter of tradition, I will go ahead and plug the socials. Zane, why don't you tell the folks where they can find you on the socials?
You can find me on Twitter at Zane_RM. And I think that's kind of about it at this point. I'm kind of taking, you know, socials. I'm not as active as I used to be, but that's where you can find me if you want to give me a shout out.
Yeah. All right. So you can find me at, on Twitter at PodVSEveryone. You can find me on Blue Sky at NooseCoog dot whatever it is, bsky.social. You're not going to find me probably anywhere else other than that. I don't have like Instagram and TikTok like the, like Craig and all the youngins have. And then, of course, subscribe to the newsletter. That is, again, if you've made it this far, you probably already subscribed to the newsletter. But subscribe to the newsletter. That's where we publish the episodes first. If we have any issues with the feed, that makes sure that you get the episodes. And then if I ever, ever, ever decide to get off my ass and actually write again, that's where you would get that. I would be publishing that there. So subscribe. The newsletter,
you can find it.
Yeah. podcastvseveryone.substack.com. You can find us there. Subscribe. It'll get things delivered directly to your email. That's it.
I think, yeah. I mean, since Craig's definitely the only person still living, I'll say shout out to Census Fail's lead singer. You know what we're talking about. And
there we go. I have no idea what you were just mentioning. That is completely lost on me.
It's in the text thread.
Yeah, no, I saw it in the text thread too. Still lost on me.
Oh, so, it's the image above. It's the image above.
I was like, I saw it, and I was like, I don't know what that means, but okay, that's awesome. You know, Craig was very pleased, and Craig was laughing and very excited. So, I was very pleased and excited and happy for my friend, even though I had no idea what he was talking about. So,
that's right. Okay.
This does happen sometimes. Sometimes there's this generation gap between me and you guys. And, you know, it's that's like the age, as we get older, the gap seems smaller, but then there's these moments where, there's still a pretty decent gap there. So,
all right.
Anyway. All right. So as we finish this off, we say, go fucking Cougs, Zane.
Go fucking Cougs.
And Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated.
Even your pets.
Even your pets. Especially your pets.
And join a union, man. Find a union.
Join a union. Find a union. 100%.
You did great. All right, man.